Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
We're going to call to order the 230th Correctional Training Commission meeting. And we need to do a roll call.
Captain Barnett?
Present.
Dr. Bethay?
Present.
Director Chippendale?
Present.
Ms. Connors?
Present.
Ms. Ebb?
Present.
Mr. Fonseca? Mr. Gaskins?
Present.
DSL Green?
Present.
Colonel Stem?
Present.
Superintendent Klein?
Present.
Dr. O'Brien? Sergeant Okunora? Captain Pena? Secretary Scruggs?
Present.
Ms. Robinson?
Present.
Lieutenant Shumate?
Present.
Secretary Tolentino? Mr. Washington?
Very good. All right, I think we can go into our very first agenda item, which is Training and Standards Commission. Director Wesley.
Good morning, everyone. The Training and Standards Report for the past quarter, January, February, March, which is also on your tablets. Current number of correctional officers, 11,293. This is all of April 1st. That's a difference of 14 correctional officers from the previous quarter. The AFC's process and certification cards issued for probationary staff, 341. There's 88 reported non-officer status. The total of separations for this past quarter was 236, and that breaks down into 51 terminations, 111 resignations, and 74 retirements. Those requiring either a higher level review or supplemental information, there were 45 of those applications. There was seven cases referred to the commission. That's a new stat that's going to be tracked this year. There's four commission approved certifications, one commission denied certification, and two in which the agency declined to proceed. Training compliance by agency, we are at 93.75% compliant. 991 programs approved for both police and corrections, 146 new correctional instructors, zero selection standard audits completed, two academy audits completed, zero in-service audit completed, and zero of other audits completed. And that concludes the report. Is there any questions?
Thank you, Director Wesley. We'll go to legal issues with Ms. Ice.
Just a couple of things, and Shaka, frankly, will correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the two, leave their names out because we're in open session, two employees that the commission voted to hold revocation hearings have been separated from the Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services. So presumably, well, not presumably, there's nothing to revoke, so you wouldn't have those hearings. And then I know that we had a revocation a month or two ago, probably a month ago. It's on my list of things to write. I need to write the decision. I haven't gotten to it yet. And that's all.
Thank you. We're going to go into old business, and we'll go back to Director Wesley.
The first item, which again you can follow along on the tablets, is the updated AFC application for certification forms. I have both. They are both the correctional ones and the ones for DJS. During the January 14th commission meeting, there were changes that were suggested for rewording Section 9 about prior substance abuse by applicants for certification. Specifically, the previous language was to change the usage parameters for the use of natural cannabis or cannabinoids. The form now has specific wording for the candidate never having used marijuana 12 or more months since last usage or less than 12 months since last usage of natural cannabis or cannabinoids. So that updated form, which you can find there on the tablets, has currently been posted to the DPSCS website. Again, it affects both juvenile services and correctional certifications. So if there's any questions.
May I have the floor? This was lost on me last time. Perhaps all of you understood this, but for the sake of just clarity, when I looked at the regulation regarding cannabis use, I didn't understand, but now I do, and just want to make sure it's clear to everyone, that the way the regulation is written, there's an overlap, there's an inconsistency. So if you used cannabis exactly 1 year prior to the date of hire, part of the regulation says you shall not be hired, and the other part says you can be hired. So my understanding is, while it would be helpful to fix the regulation, my understanding is the AFC is clarifying and making the distinction that it sounds like the decision has been made to allow hiring at that 12-month mark. So it's 12 or less months, you can be hired, and then more than, sorry, the opposite. 12 or less months, and then the other side of it is more than 12 months.
12 or more.
12 or more. Thank you. So that was just for sake of clarity.
Any other questions, comments? All right. The next agenda item, foreign background updated survey results. Again, in January, we had a questionnaire, and it was resent out due to the not too many responses that we had received. The internal and background investigations. We sent it out again. We got a total of 12 responses. The information, again, is also listed on the tablet, but as a summary. Methods for verification for the different agencies varied and included things such as direct contact with individuals that were listed on background forms, reaching out to embassies or third-party verification, foreign credential evaluation services, and there were certain ones that were approved and provided, naturalized citizens only to ensure that the 5-year or 5-plus-year history was being met. The process for proceeding when unable to verify 5-plus years. And some of the agencies responded that they simply do not hire them. They hire only naturalized individuals. Some would hire permanent residents, but I believe they still had to have the 5 years of history available or green card. And then personal interviews were also completed. Again, that was the different agencies. There was not any one that was followed through by all agencies across the state. Some of the concerns that were specifically cited in hiring individuals that could not provide the 5-plus years, a security or background would be incomplete. There may be foreign influence and or espionage concerns. Language and communication barriers, difficulties with conflict between the IIs or the residents and the staff, communication, cultural differences, problems with understanding and being able to interpret de-escalation, lack of familiarity with the U.S. justice system, and security clearance due to lack of verifiable history. Applicants with limited U.S. residency can be difficult to properly vet, and so investigators, they concluded that they really need to have your investigators verifying pertinent information. At least that's what was done in some of the agencies. So if you want to open a discussion, if there's somebody or an agency here feels that there is still an issue or concern, this would be the time to speak up.
I guess the end of this is, I brought it up. I think it would behoove us to set sort of a clear standard as to what the minimum amount of time that we should have to be able to look at, because I think it's unclear, and I think as this result shows, people are doing it differently. Some are moving on, some are just stopping. And I think that, for U.S. citizens, it's easy to get the information, and we sort of follow a process, but for the non-U.S. citizens, it's difficult, and I think we have a hodgepodge of what we're doing. So I don't know what that standard is, I think that's what I would hope we could come up with.
So would you like to see a committee form to discuss this? Is that what you're...
Yeah, maybe a work group to look at amending the regulations or clarifying them.
Okay, so do you want to put forth a motion to...
What can I add? While when you convene that work group, and this is something we had a short discussion about, if you can add to that work group, making sure that that person is still eligible through their career, because one of the things that we ran into recently in DPSCS was an employee arrest, and then finding out through that arrest that their green card had expired. But they had been employed with us since 2004, and the green card was good at that time. So I think the task force needs to look at, or unless other people can tell me, how are you all also gauging that beyond the initial acceptance of them?
Their certifications are renewed technically each year, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, we could definitely add. I mean, that's sort of the discussion we had last time, is we look at the hiring standards, but then once they're hired, what are the standards that apply to maintaining...
To keep them in compliance, correct.
And really the only one, and I don't know how solid it is, but the clearest one is more related to training, right? You have to meet the minimum training standards. If you don't meet the training standards, move to non-officer status. I don't know that, I would like to see, I agree with you, I'd like to see clear standards for if their arrest, what's the process, if you lose your ability to work. We've had cases where people lose their license, and most of them have been probationary cases, but I looked at the hiring standard, and it says, the minimum hiring standard is you have to have your license, or in a DUI situation, minimum hiring standard is you can't have more than two DUIs. And then you have an employee that's working for you, then all of a sudden they get their second DUI, and you're like, well, you wouldn't even meet the minimum hiring standards. But there's no real clear line for, well, you're already hired.
Yeah.
So
And this incident that we had, we didn't even go searching for this. The employee was actually arrested by Anne Arundel County, and his wife notified us.
Causing problems.
Yep, you're causing the problems. Wife notified us because she thought he had been arrested by ICE, because she knew that his green card had expired. And so it's like, I don't know if you all have ever run into that, but how do you manage that in your organizations? That's something I'd like the task force to look at when they look at.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would come through personnel, right? That probably every agency has a policy. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to report police contact.
Absolutely.
Police contact would go to somebody investigating it, looking at the case, and it would come.
The police contact is not the issue. The issue is the absence of the continued, the green card, right. She knew that he was not here. Legally, yes. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think we could add that in, make a motion to...
Okay.
Create a work group to look at the minimum standards for background cases, hiring standards, background cases that are
foreign-born citizens.
To include standards related to maintaining certification while employee with an agency.
Are you able to summarize the motion?
I wrote it. Yeah, I did write it. So I think the motion is to create a work group to review the background standards, to include the standards for continued employment of our foreign-born employees.
There we go.
And you want to say it again?
Yes, ma'am.
Are you limited?
We're going to create.
Foreign-born.
Are you limited to? Go ahead. Is it just employees?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of foreign-born. I think it's the
non-citizen.
Checks related to non-U.S. citizens.
So would it be
we're workable with the work group regarding non-citizens as applied to application status and continued ability to work.
You got it. Short and sweet.
I think continued ability to work is beyond,
That's
beyond
what I'm
just non-US citizens. I think continued ability to work applies to all certified.
And all certified employees' ability to work.
Yeah, for continued employment. And I'm not going to summarize that.
All right, Sharon, you want to try it again?
That would play memory. Mission created work group regarding non-citizens minimum application requirements for non-citizens and reviewed minimum requirements for continued employment for all certified employees.
So I think the work group is being devised to review the continued ability to work of our non-citizens and the minimum application requirements. All right, say it again. Continued ability to work.
Yeah, the work group is committed to convening to focus on the background, initial hire and background checks.
So we need to add initial hiring wasn't said the first time, but we add that. Okay, initial hiring and background for non-citizens. In alignment with the minimum requirements, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And to review all certified employees.
For standards to maintain certification.
To maintain.
All.
For renewal.
For renewal.
Is it ongoing duty or is it thinking of time and renewal?
Yeah, it's ongoing.
Right.
True.
And it's not doing renewals.
Is it a felony or something? Yeah.
Right. So it's to maintain certification.
To continue to ability or renewal of certifications?
Not renewal. They remove renewal.
Maintain
and renewal.
Okay.
The non-standards for continued. The non-standards for maintenance and renewal for all certified employees.
Can you put that in the chat?
Yes, I will.
Okay, so we have a motion to create a work group regarding, one, the minimum requirements for background checks and certification of non-citizens, and two, minimum standards for maintenance and renewal of certification for all employees. That motion is made by Ms. Connors.
I'll second that.
Any objections?
I will just add one thing. I think you should add the word mandated in front of employees. Chairman,
yeah.
Your motion.
Yes. I agree, yes. That was implying it specifically.
Employees. Okay, so the amended motion is sorry, technology is great when it works. Create a work group regarding, one, the minimum requirements for background checks and certification of non-citizens, and two, minimum standards for mandated, is it mandated employees?
The minimum standards for maintenance and renewal certification for all mandated.
For all mandated employees. Thank you. And we had a second by Superintendent Klein.
Second.
Okay. And we can
do all in favor?
Aye.
Any nays? Okay, motion approved.
Okay, I'll send something out to individuals here, and see if we can get some participation going on this in the next couple days.
All right. And we do have two new members. So new member update. Are either of our new members here? Okay, you gotta join us at the table. So, okay, so we have Mr. Brian Gardner, this is for the Southern Region Representative, and we also have Joseph Hughes for the Eastern Region Representative. So we welcome both of them on July's first meeting. I think you will be with us.
Yes,
great, we look forward to having you. And we're going to go directly back to Director Westby with the new business reporting academic failures.
Okay, this is in regards to the academic trainee removal notification, ATRN. This was sent to all academy directors April 2nd. The link was in the memo, and there's also a form under the DPSCS site under PCTC resources and forms. excuse me. If your recruiter candidate does not complete their academy and is removed, for example, academic failure, poor conduct, and they're dismissed, then their names must be entered and submitted to the commission. Under COMAR 12-1001-11-G2, it permits only one additional entry-level training to meet the requirement for the same mandated position. So if an individual comes to your agency, is in their academy and fails, and they get the second shot, and they fail that again, in theory, they are not permitted to then
leave from your agency and then turn right around and go to another agency the next week and apply and come right back to an academy. So hopefully this vehicle will be put in place, and so when you're putting in an application for certification for your individuals downstairs in certification, they'll be able to catch that and notify the agencies that this person cannot be employed. It'll flag them, as well as, you know, them not being able to make another attempt. There's a database that we have, as I said, that was sent out. At this point, if there's any questions and you're curious to find out if any of your applicants are on this list, they would have to reach out to Joan Hennard and they can be notified of that. Is there questions about that? I know that was sent out and not everybody's received them. I can, if it was sent out, as I said, to the training director, if you did not receive that or if it was sent to someone erroneously, please reach out to me and I'll make sure that that link gets submitted or sent out to the proper individual. Any questions about that?
Is that just specific to academic failure, or if somebody fails out of academy for like defensive tactics or medical issue, you fail them out, they come back, they
fail out
again.
That's their second attempt.
That's it, regardless.
At this point, yeah, that's. We're having a conversation, and we've had several conversations because there may be extenuating circumstances in terms of what you just mentioned, a medical. Somebody becomes pregnant and has to leave the academy in return. And the language is not specific in Comar, and I would say at this point, until conversations happen in the future and that gets amended, it would probably have to be on a case-by-case basis, because obviously an individual that is removed from an academy due to a medical issue is very different than one that's removed from a cheating issue or an academic failure. So it may be at this point, and this is, we're very new at this, it may be that if you have an individual that fits that parameter, they'd have to come and be referred to the commission no different than anything else until at some point in the future language is made or specifically amended to exclude that. But this, at this point, this is more supposed to be a method, or as I said, a vehicle to trying to stop individuals that may be serial hopping from one agency to another. And so this is one method that's been put in place to kind of act as like a gatekeeping. So. Again, if you did not receive it or you need to get a copy, please reach out to me and I'll make sure that I get that sent out.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I'm sorry. What was the Comar reference for the restrictions on the necessary?
Okay, hold on, because you know I didn't memorize it. It's 12-10-01-11-G2. Okay, if you go under, I was just being told that if you go under references under the CTC binder, you'll see the Comar links under, there it is, where it says Comar link to MPCTC site, so you can reach it that way. Have to go under statutes in Comar and then go to, good lord, no easy way to get here. And then under the Comar tab, you can search Comar now, and after hitting like 15 different tabs, you'll get it. So, and if not, you can always reach out to me and I can direct it to you, send you a link. Any other questions with that? Yes.
Only because I'm asking. So if a candidate is in the process of being hired, the investigator can come to that database to find out if they've been dismissed from another institution?
At this point, what they would have to do is reach out to certification here and say, I have candidate John Doe, and here's the information, the date of birth, or whatever the case. And then they can look and say, actually, John Doe was removed from, you know, Howard County after failing out twice.
Okay. Is there an appeals process?
However, you know, one thing worth discussing is that very last line that says the same mandated position. I would think someone would argue if I went to a different agency, that's not the same mandated position. Potentially.
So, I mean, because it's a good time in a different agency versus.
I think the word mandate is more. But that's the kind of stuff where we're keeping a running list of every time we find one of these Comar nuances, rather than go in and try to update that particular regulation, which is a very time-consuming process. It's probably better served to have a collection of updates and submit them all at the same time. And so this is one on that list.
To Sharon's question about whether dismissal for academic failure could be appealed, obviously Matthew was right. But if the employee is then later terminated, then the employee could file a grievance or an appeal and go through that process. So I don't know that the OAH would be able to overturn anything from the commission, but.
The correctional services article on the commission indicates that if you go to OAH and you're reinstated, the administrative law judge can order reinstatement without further review of certification.
Right. Yeah. My bigger concern was for individuals who are dismissed for non-economic failures. So if it were a medical dismissal or anything that could arguably be considered protected under other employment situations, if there's no appeal to address how they are now fit versus one then, that's my concern. So like, start the academy, just use a pregnancy example, you find out that you're pregnant, you have to leave, that's straight one, and you know, that you're not disqualified for any other reason but that, I see it's problematic that you are still subject to that same hardline rule without an appeals process.
Well, I think you had brought up earlier that you would see, not in so many words, but you could seek an accommodation. So that may be an accommodation or a temporary accommodation. It doesn't answer your question about appeals. Although still, if an employee is separated, they still have the right to file a grievance or appeal.
It's like kind of things to talk about.
Yeah.
I will add, this does not come up very often, but on at least one occasion, when I first got into the position of deputy director, we had a request from an agency and for an individual that was having difficulty with defensive tactics. And we allowed her 4 attempts. And without following the strictures of this regulation, she could have said no and the agency could have moved to separate. But the issue was, who's harmed by violating this regulation? It's our own regulation, but who's harmed by it?
But then my fear would be then getting into who gets the considerations and doesn't. The less leeway, less subjective you can do, the better. Like,
that's what we end up.
Exactly. That's why you say that. No, I think that's all true.
But usually what has happened just by way of practice is we read this regulation and that's the position that we take. You get two attempts. And then some agencies will say, come on, can't we have another attempt? So we won't reach out to an agency and say, we're not going to follow our own regulation. But when the agencies push back consistently, we have said, we will give you another opportunity. And that's only happened a couple of times. But I think that underscores the reason, the need to update this regulation.
I also, yes.
I would like to speak to them because I'm one of those. In Howard County, I had a correctional officer who was academically dismissed first go round. Obviously, I chose to recycle her. She got all the way through to defense tactics. For whatever reason, she just was not getting how to do restraints. Second, dismissal. I did come back and have this conversation with Matt and said, I believe she could be a viable correctional officer. I sent her through FTO, she did everything well. What's my option? And I was kind of like, you don't have an option, Margaret. So I lost potentially what I believe could have been a good correctional officer. She ultimately resigned rather than me have to reject her on probation. But I really did feel strongly that I believe that she could have been a correctional officer, good correctional officer, if I could have just been able to put her through defense tactics again.
One of the things that, one of the conversations that we have is to talk to the academy instructors and say, you know, this person was really, really close. What do you, you know, what do you think? But they will not shy away from saying this person can't do it. And so why waste the resources and the time on somebody when the instructors who have been with this person for 6, 7, 8 weeks will say they can't master this objective. So, but I, again, I think it underscores the reason, the need to update this regulation.
And the way that regulation reads now is she didn't just lose that employee, but the whole system did, because that person can never work on that skill and ever come back according to that regulation.
And Deidre and I spoke about this, and one of the issues is if you have your certification revoked, there's a 2-year time frame. Right? Is it, it's not consistent on the police and the correction side. One of them specifically says you have to wait 2 years if you've been revoked, and that might be a police regulation, right? But we apply that, we've been applying that same rule on corrections to be consistent. So you can do whatever you do, you know, to violate the standards and have your certification revoked and 2 years later come back and again try, right? That seems that individual is in a worse position than someone who just didn't master something in the academy, and we're telling that person, nope, you can never come back. So that kind of consistency is what we need to bring into these regulations.
I think we can also make a case for having a category instead of an outright dismissal if you have an individual who is, say, medically incapable of finishing, of switching that from, instead of a dismissal, to, as brought up, either they're withdrawn or incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of pause that time. There's a difference between going back and starting in week 2 or 3 of the academy and finishing where you left off versus you just got to start all over from square one. So
with that incomplete, do they retain employment while it's incomplete, or is it incomplete and they can come back again?
It would have to be no different than when you put in a notice of personnel action and you put them on non-officer status.
That's difficult. Yeah. That's difficult. Because when you put them on non-officer status, now you got to find somewhere for them to work that meets a skill set that they have, and we don't necessarily... I know, and our department, we don't necessarily have that. That's hard to.
But that's to speak to Ms. Chippendale's point of we had potential that might have been an avenue that, and this doesn't, I guess, happen so frequently that this is going to be an everyday occurrence, but it is something that needs to be mentioned because, in theory, it could occur.
I have a question. Does the time frame matter? Because you have a year. So if they're still within their year of probationary, but they haven't been to the academy yet, would you have to put them on the officer status?
I mean,
especially for withdrawal or incomplete, not a dismissal, but
no,
especially
but if
for
you're
that.
Trying to avoid, if you're trying to avoid that, well, this is their first shot and they only have one more, you know, and you want to say, let, you know, that you could just outright say you'll just have to start all over. That was your first shot. This is going to be your second one. But if you want to hold on to them and you're worried about that, this may be, I'm not saying that it is, it may be an avenue that can be taken. So you could just say, you know.
I think when you do one, you set the precedent for anybody else to have that same opportunity. So I think we just have to be careful about that, because the person that you know may really be able to get over that hurdle that you give that advantage to. It is not fair to let that person that did not get over that hurdle have that same advantage if they're under. So I don't know how we do the balancing act on that. And we mitigate the budget associated with keeping them on, not in a position that they're being hired to. And just with experience from individuals that have been put in non-officer status, they get in that non-officer status and they like what they're doing and then they want that job. So I just think there's some other risks and challenges we really need to think through when we make some determinations about the withdrawal and the incomplete that we do. And then you may not see it in some of the smaller agencies, I don't know. But I know we do see that within DPSS. Any other questions? Okay, we are going to make a motion to go into closed session. And can I get
reactions?
What you need? Yes, we will.
Okay, so motion to go into closed session for Mr. Gaskin. Do we have a second?
Voice vote.
Voice vote.
All in favor.
All in favor.
Aye.
Any nays? All right, we're going to ask our visitors to step out. Okay. Someone close the door. Yeah, close the door for us.
It is proposed that the Correctional Training Commission's open session of its 230th meeting on April 15, 2026, being held at the Public Safety Education and Training Center in Sykesville, Maryland, be adjourned to a closed session. The session will be closed under the authority of General Provisions, Article Section 3-305B, 1, 2, and 7, Annotated Code of Maryland. The reasons for closing the session may be to discuss the appointment and employment of an individual over whom the commission has jurisdiction, to protect the privacy or reputation of an individual with respect to a matter that is not related to public business, and to consult with counsel and obtain legal advice. During this closed session, the topic to be discussed under subsection 1, to discuss the appointment and employment of an individual over whom the commission has jurisdiction, is one request for certification from the Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services.
Okay, so we are officially out of closed session. I do not believe we have any other business. Is there any?
Okay. During the closed session, the Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services presented findings to support the certification of an officer. The commission members voted 11-0 to deny certification.
Do you need to put the one that...
One abstention. It voted 11-0 and one abstention to deny certification.
All right. Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Second.
Thank you all very much. Bye.